Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. My next guest is Vince Vetro, and we talk today about his new film called Sisyphus Rides. There you go. And his new book, The Lending Journey. And you can find out more about Vince and about the filmmakers and about what the film is all about at thelendingjourney.com. Vince is a passionate guy. He's kind of all over the place in a way, but in a focused way, which is kind of cool and makes no sense at all. I understand that, but that's okay. He comes from a poor family, and he always wanted to be rich. And he talks about loving equally and how we have to have our lines moved a little bit here and there from time to time. He talks about development. He talks about social justice. There's a whole lot going on in this interview. Leadership lessons. I think you're going to really enjoy it for a variety of reasons. So stay tuned. Don't forget to check out my website, davidpecklive.com, for more interviews, information about my book, Real Change is Incremental, and about my public speaking. And also, you can come alongside and help support face-to-face through patreon.com. Check that out too if you're interested. And also rabble.ca for other interviews that I've published from a social justice perspective. And also just a whole other host of info and interviews there as well. Stay tuned. Vince Vetro from thelendingjourney.com. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, Vince Vetro.
Yes.
I got that right.
Yes.
Usually I ask people before I hit the record button. And what's so beautiful about digital is we're 10 seconds in, so I could hit the record button again and start over. It wouldn't cost us anything.
No, you got it. You got it.
I got right. It. I nailed it. Yeah. It was a quick thank you and a shout out to the Oak Park Neighborhood Center and Michelle Noel for lending us the space again today to do an interview. And I think we've got a lot of kids downstairs singing songs and hanging out and doing the daycare thing. So you might hear a little bit of that in the background, but I hope it brings a smile to your face, kind of like it is for Vince and I. So Vince, thanks for joining me today. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your new book, The Lending Journey, and a film.
Yes.
Not sure which chicken or egg here, which came first, but a film called Sisyphus Rides, which,
yes,
because of my philosophical background, certainly had my ear and my eye as well. So tell me a little bit about the journey of The Lending Journey. How's that?
Yes, well, I was doing consulting work in Ecuador for an organization called the Christian Missionary Alliance. And while I was doing some sort of discovery work for them, we're up in the mountain villages. And every time I would go to a village, and we would like visit a local church, you couldn't find anybody. And so what I found out is that people were so poor that everybody was out working the fields, including the pastors.
When and, you say you couldn't find anybody, you mean like there was just nobody in the town or the village or the communities. I mean, where is everyone?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And so especially, let's say, more the community leaders.
Right.
And so I was asking people that I was traveling with who are from those countries, you know, why can't I find these significant people? And they said, well, because they're all out in the fields working because there's just not enough money to do things. And I said, well, why doesn't somebody just lend, even especially some of the pastors, why doesn't we just lend them money?
Yeah.
So they can
classic
run a little...
white guy with all the solutions, right?
Right, exactly. And add to that a type A.
That's right.
So
and
anyways,
type A, yes.
So
yes.
I just kept saying about lending people money so they could start little businesses so that they could get ahead. And the organization I was working with, they didn't really understand, and neither did I. I didn't have a clue what I was talking about. I just thought this was an answer. And so
right.
I just started lending people money out of my pocket.
Wow.
I mean, it was just $20 here, $50 there. And then slowly we started lending money to more people. And then we started lending so much larger sums that the question came up that shouldn't we be a little bit more organized? And so then we got our charitable status in Ecuador and then started developing more throughout the country. And so it really just, it evolved into...
So did you go from being sort of full-time business guy to full-time charitable guy, or was it a kind of a blend of the two?
I did both.
You did both?
Yeah. So my...
Was that a good idea or a bad idea at the
time?
Well,
you know, I mean, that's a tough one because the reason we were able to develop our charity so quickly was because we were self-financed, because
right.
I had done fairly well as a businessman. So I didn't have to go to people asking for financial
help. Right, right.
Because that was
you had your own startup capital in a sense.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I just kept taking money out of my company.
Right.
So
right.
I didn't have to ask anybody. The only downfall of that, now in retrospect, is that...
Was the shareholders revolt? Is that what the downfall is?
Well, yeah. Yes. Well, you've got this great thing going that nobody knows about,
right?
Because you're self-financed.
Yeah, of course.
And so you
yeah.
haven't had to build a network donors,
yeah,
right? Because you're
sure. Yep.
So, and you know that hurt us a little bit, but I didn't have to report to anybody. I didn't have to ask 20 people. You know, what can I do? And when we lost money, which we did, I mean, I did some really bad deals. There's some stories in the book that about some of the things that we did. And they're really funny. You'll kill yourself laughing. But they weren't funny at the time we were losing that money. But it was my money that I lost.
Right, right.
So
right.
I didn't have to report back to my board, although we did have a board.
You just maybe didn't sleep too well for the next couple of nights.
Right, because yeah. I was upset with myself.
How could I have been so stupid? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'd read the book. I mean,
sure.
By that point, by the time we had registered a charity, I'd read enough books and I'd studied stuff from the United Nations on how to do microfinance. And I'd read Eunice's book as well.
Banker to the Poor?
Banker to the Poor. So I had gained some insight and ideas on that. And then we had done relatively well in Ecuador, which is, we had then got a phone call saying, hey, people have heard of what you're doing in Ecuador. Will you now bring that project to Nicaragua? And then we moved. We were working in both countries.
It's a fascinating story. It really is. You say, I think, I read a proof of the book before I think it was actually published, which was pretty recently, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and available, by the way, folks, on thelendingjourney.com. Also probably through Amazon.
Through Amazon.ca, yep.
You can find out more about Vince there, about the film, Sisyphus Rides, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. You talked about, it's a really fascinating story to me in the sense that, you know, I love this image of, and I wonder if it probably comes out in the film, but this idea of, you know, I can see you, you know, reaching into your pocket and just lending people money. I mean, you don't get much more grassroots than that and much more driven by a passion and a heart for change, it seems to me. Maybe a little misguided at the time, right?
Right.
Maybe a little bit white guy with all the answers. Listen, I get that.
Yep.
Totally understand that because you're there. Right? It's in your face. You go, what's going on?
Yeah.
How can this be possible? Right? And
so
here's the immediate kind of solution. Okay, I can fix things.
Right.
Which is lovely because there's a heart and a soul there, I think, that is missing in a lot of cases.
Right.
But you talk about in the book at some point about you should have been thinking about inches and not miles? Or was it the right. other way around?
No, correct.
Because it's a bit of both, right?
Correct. Right. Well, right. I mean, I'm a visionary.
Yeah.
And so visionary pioneers are great for getting things off the ground and for creating the initial structure to develop something. But they're not always the best at taking it to the next level
right.
because they
right.
go back. Once it's structured, they go in the visionary mode again.
Right.
Well,
right.
which isn't visionary mode. It's not what maybe visionary mode in another country, but not to stay where you're at. But yeah, so there's that part. But having spent so many years overseas, I mean, you know, we talk about in the book, one day we're going to the bank to make a deposit and we get robbed in the bank.
Which is very funny.
Yeah. But the security guards won't go after the thieves because they're saying we don't have like a benefit plan for our wives if we die.
Right.
So you want your money? You go chase the guy
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's,
here, borrow my cuffs.
Yeah. So it what it, in a sense it was that, but you know, such as one day I get a phone call and there's a coup, and my director phones and says, "I'm in a Red Cross facility. I could be here for 4 or 5 days until this thing settles
right,
down."
Right. Right.
So it. Yes, it is true. Maybe we grew before we were ready, but the challenges of.
And is that what you meant by the inches and miles? Kind of.
Yeah, like you know,
maybe baby steps would have been a little better.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, you know, we were in Latin America for 12 years.
Wow.
So I don't, you know, sometimes, you know, when I think, you know, how many baby steps did we take?
Oh, absolutely, you
know,
yeah.
But it, you know, maybe instead of, well, here's the thing. When you walk into a community and you see need, you want to address that need. Now you walk into another community and you see need and you want to address that need.
Yeah.
And all you can think of is addressing the need.
Yeah, of course.
And it's not a wise, you know, it's not... It's like my board in the early days would say, if you don't, you have to some degree, pay yourself.
Yes.
So a check would come in, and then I would sign the check back, and I would send it to South America. And they're going, wait, that's not what we told you.
Yeah.
We told you have to take a percentage of this. You've got to take something. But when you see this unbelievable need, you just give the money away, which isn't a wise...
No, it's not sustainable. Anyone who's worked in the field knows it's not sustainable.
Right.
And what's ironic is... This is, I would argue, I would think, and I hardly know you at all, it runs totally contrary to your business side, right? So it's like this interesting paradoxical mix.
Right? It is. Now, I grew up in a foster family. So I've got maybe 25 foster brothers, three adopted brothers.
You know, it's a lot of stockings at Christmas, man. That's,
it was great, yeah. So so at times there were 10 of us.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm one of the biological children of my parents. But we grew up around need, seeing people in need all the time. And they just came into our house and they became part of the family. So it was just natural when you saw somebody in need that you met the need. Well, so that part of your brain that controls, I need to help, sometimes supersedes the part of your brain that says, okay, we need to be more methodical about this. We took everybody. My parents just, you had a need, we brought you in. And if we didn't have a space for you, they blow up an air mattress.
That's an incredible gift. I wrote in the margin of the book, I remember this now, several places, just this gift of hospitality and hospitable environment that you grew up in, wanting to, when I knew we would meet, wanting to ask you about that. I too grew up in a house where you didn't have to take your shoes off.
Right.
And that, it so stands out to me when I go to somebody's house now and they, oh, don't leave your shoes on. We don't take your shoes on, you know, and it's rare, right?
Right.
But it's just this metaphor. It's this, I don't know, gift. It's generous. Yeah. It's open, right?
Yeah.
It's about a space to be you know? And that sounds exactly like what you grew up
in. Well, yeah. And when people say to me, what's the best part of you doing ministry? I say, when I get to sit on a dirt floor and eat with a family off one plate, we're sharing one cup. Who knows
what Yeah.
Sickness may be there. But I never did, I never wanted to build the ministry for the ministry. I always built the ministry because I loved being with the people. Like
But
as I've talked to a lot of guys who've built charitable ministries, the management of the ministry, which has to happen, it has to happen, of your charity, whatever it is that you're doing, that has to happen. So in order to do what you really want to do, you've got to do the other part. And sometimes the other part takes 70% of your time.
Sure. Sure.
So you get 30% to do what you really want to do.
Right.
But
right.
for me to sit on the floor and eat with people,
you have
to do the other side.
So I definitely want to talk about that as well. That's something else that you, I'll get the quote from the book, but you wrap it up by talking about development. I mean, for me, the book was very narrative driven, lots of stories, lots of, you know, it's startup kind of like stories in a sense, but also I think there's some really great lessons there to be learned for anybody that wants to do development anywhere in the world,
right.
you know, that wants to, you know, lend a hand, as
right.
it were, from a fundraising perspective, but also rooting and embedding themselves somewhere. I think there's lots to be learned. But you talk about community, and that's certainly a thread that comes out in the book for sure, the sense that this has to be done with others in mind. And that doesn't mean just others being present in the room.
Right.
I got the sense that this has to be about give and take.
Right.
This has to be about listening.
Right.
And I'm struck personally, and as a development guy, and so many you know, parachute into a place and don't have either the ability or the willingness or the desire to listen well.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, absolutely. And you know, the reason probably I was respected or loved the most was because I kept coming back.
Right.
I basically, it became my second home, was whatever country I was working in Latin America, and truly was my home, because my home growing up was the United Nations. So to walk into another country say I'm home, I didn't have to do, sure, the cultural issue I had to deal with, I had to grow and I had to learn and I had to mature. But the other side, you know, and probably initially people were saying, well, this guy's a fake and a phony, because there's no way you can call me family when you've just met me. Well,
right.
when you
right.
grow up
right.
and you wake up in the morning and all of a sudden you've got a new brother and he's right. sharing your room.
The United Nations. That's the United Nations you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes?
Like
yeah, not the United Nations.
No, right. Not the United Nations.
Yes.
But
not like your dad was an ambassador to the UN in Micronesia.
No. Right. Yeah. But when you grow up in that environment that your parents say, okay, here's Tommy, and Tommy came last night and he could be with us for the next 5 years, so he's now your brother. You know what? And it didn't matter whether he was an Aboriginal Indian.
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether he was from India. It didn't matter whether he was Hispanic. Like, our house was just... So it was easy to call everybody family because you didn't know any different. And so that's what it was like in Latin America.
You say here a quote, "I was determined to find a way to leave my own unique footprints in the world. I was not easily intimidated. And I seem to have this thing about injustice and the cruelty of picking on people who can't defend themselves."
Right. That
So that was a seed that was planted clearly pretty early.
Oh, for sure.
And then not just planted, but watered and nurtured and over the years.
Right. I watched my mother. Both my parents, but you know, your fathers are usually out earning money to keep the roof over your head.
Right.
But you're watching your you know, our mothers are generally the ones who are more merciful and graceful.
Right.
And so you watch that, and you know, 24 hours a day.
Well, how can it not have an impact, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, this is a book. This is what's so wonderful to me about the whole podcasting thing that I do, when I get to interview people. And I interviewed a young guy recently about a film called Eastern, about a school in Toronto where this great basketball team over the years had been fostered and nurtured and raised, basically. It's an old school that was eventually closed in Regent Park in Toronto. And I mean, it's a tragic story. It's a beautiful story. It's sad and wonderful and uplifting and all these things. And it's about the basketball team and the coaches.
Right.
But it's so not about basketball. It's about everything but basketball.
Right.
It's about teaching and community and human contact and building relationships and trust. Everybody's story is like that. This is what I so love about about all of this work. And maybe there's something there from your comment about injustice and this sense of being at risk.
Right.
And aren't we all in some way,
right?
Needy and at risk, you know?
Yeah. And the answer is not to, the answer is, you know, that there's that quote, give a person a fish, feed them for a day, you know, you teach them the fish, feed them for a lifetime. You know what? That's North American capitalistic thinking.
Yeah.
But this is good.
Sure.
The tagline that we had was, you have to truly see transformation, you have to sit down and eat the fish with them.
Right.
It's not enough to teach them the fish, because that's not going to transform them. You don't transform people by giving them money. And it's a wonderful North American thing, because we have to have that. But that is not what transforms the world. What transforms the world is you got to stay eat the fish to know them.
Let's bring that quote in. I don't know where it is exactly. I'll find it. But that's the community piece I was just talking about seconds ago. So it's about building real relationships. I mean, development is so focused on this idea of participation and participatory rural appraisals and participatory action research and all these acronyms. And isn't it wonderful? And we've got to include people on the ground, men, women, boys, you know, men, women, children, you know, boys and girls, etc. It's very inclusive, it seems. But I'm not always sure the real UNs of the World Banks, the IMFs, the World Visions, and so on, are willing to actually eat with the families that they're working with. And I don't want to be like hypercritical, but at the same time, sometimes I wonder if there's almost an anti-relational edge that's being imposed, not by design, but by default.
Well, what do we value most? And I've taken so many people overseas with me. We value most time. And we would be willing to give up money before we give up time. But time is the answer to transform people's lives. Because, you know, I mean, people know you care when you keep showing up. Now they're ready to listen. But they aren't going to be transformed by money. Money is important, but it isn't the transformational element that has the biggest impact. Because when they know you care, now they say, okay, I value what they have to say.
Here's the line here. It's near the end of the book. You say something about not knowing, but now I know it can't be a solo effort. Going forward, I'll remember that in the long run, the only way anybody gets anything done is together with others. Close quote. Right? Anything done, you say.
Right.
Right? Business, relationship, doesn't matter what you want to do. You got to do it with others. And you've used a small O on others. The existentialist in me, the philosopher in me, wants to use a capital O, if that makes any sense at all. We'll leave that for another interview.
Yes.
But there has to be this sense of inclusion and affirmation and genuine, authentic validation. What I'm hearing you say is that can happen over a meal.
Right.
And over time, obviously.
And over time, right. Yeah.
And a lot commitment.
Right.
Yeah. It's good. It's so great.
And
yeah.
a big part so of important. It, too, is in that the businessman, the philosopher in me had to tell the businessman in me was, don't think it's going to happen in one generation.
Right.
So when you're helping a mother, what you're really doing is helping the daughter. Because the daughter is watching the mother. And even if the mother fails, the daughter watched the mom attempt to succeed.
Right.
So when we look at somebody we're helping and they may fail, that's perceived failure from our perspective. We don't know the impact of that on the next generation. And so we can't think 5-10 years. We got to think way further down the road, that the impact of what we're doing isn't going to be felt.
Yeah,
and we got to get over that.
Think in miles, but maybe behave in inches.
Right,
right. Move in inches, think in miles. Right. I think.
No, that's good. That's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
So before we move into the film, I want to talk a little bit about development and another quote from the book, which was brilliant. So you said before the tape was rolling that you grew up poor but always wanted to be rich.
Right.
Tell me about that a little bit, in the sense of, to me, it's not the guy I'm talking to right now, in a sense, based on what I'm hearing you say about coming alongside others, sharing a meal with people, and of any race, religion, or whatever, it doesn't matter, right? So there's this sense of community about you that doesn't speak of corporate capitalism.
Well, I was fortunate, graduated from University of Waterloo, had an opportunity to go in business. By the time I was 31, I had five companies, three in Ontario, two in Alberta. I had over 200 full and part-time staff. Wow. And I woke up at 31, maybe 31, 32, and I just said, I really believed that money was the key to happiness. And the more I had, the happier I'd be. I woke up one morning.
You really did believe that?
Oh, gosh. I
see, that's
locked, stock, and barrel.
I'm fascinated to know where that came from. But anyway.
Well, because I saw other people who had it,
and
they looked happy.
Right. Okay, yeah.
They looked happy driving their nice cars. They looked happy driving their Beamer convertibles and this. And I bought that because I hadn't experienced that world. And then I just woke up one day and I thought, if this is... And I'd done really well. I had no debt. My companies were doing really well or making lots of money. And I just thought, man, if this is life, if this is what it's all about for the next 30 years, then there's something wrong because I'm not happy. And it just started me on this journey.
So, these things never happen just because of some crazy dream that you had overnight.
Nope.
The expression is overnight. But looking back now, as you reflect, what was going on, would you say, that was injecting that kind of this thinking, this new approach in your life, that maybe it wasn't the Beamer, maybe it wasn't the cash and the deposit.
You're right. It wasn't just one night. You're right. It just wasn't, because it wasn't help. I mean, I was helping people because I was employing them, which is
of
good.
Of course.
And that's good.
Of course, it is.
Great value.
So absolutely.
You don't want to demean those people.
No.
Who say, I find just because you didn't find value,
no,
and it
you're
doesn't
providing,
mean it's not value.
Providing for their families, they're providing for other families. There's incredible value in it. Yep.
But for me, it just was empty. It just was empty. And I wanted to help people in a different way.
And does that connect back to your upbringing, do you think?
Sure, absolutely.
In a sense?
Yeah, sure.
So maybe that sense of emptiness was coming out of, holy smokes, look what my parents were able to do. Geez, maybe I should be kind of following in their footsteps, sort of.
Or, you know what, I mean, you know, I sometimes ask myself that, so where's the divine providence in all of this? Because I think at heart, I was always a social justice person, but it just happened that I ended up going into business. You know what I mean? It's just how it unfolded. I just think there probably was a reason why I had to go into business. You know, maybe I had to see, maybe if I hadn't have, I would have always thought, you know what, that's where it is. Now I can walk into a room and speak anywhere and just say, hey, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I lived there and I lived here.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want to hire Vince to speak, it's thelendingjourney.com.
Yes, lendingjourney.com,
So we'll get a few more plugs in before this.
So maybe that's what it, maybe it was divine providence that I ended up in business.
And you know what? Maybe it's still too early to tell. Maybe you need to put another 20 years in before you look back and go, oh,
right.
Okay, now it makes perfect sense. But I was just going to say, I mean, would you have been in a position to have been in, was it Ecuador?
Right.
Lending people money out of your pocket had you not been the business guy that you were in the first place,
and,
right?
No, for sure. And for 10 years, from when I was 40 till when I was 50, I spent probably 2 days, maybe 3 days a month running my business. The rest of the time, I was traveling around the world.
Wow, okay.
Now, where do you get that opportunity?
Yeah, sure,
and
sure,
still,
sure,
every
sure.
week, I still got a paycheck.
Sure, yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know. You know,
so I'm dying to find out. The book opens with the line, "Everything starts with breakfast." You've shared a lot of breakfasts apparently over the years,
right, and that's where
back to the meal.
Yeah,
we're back to community, right?
Yeah,
which is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, because Jan and I were joking. Yeah, Jan Sochuk helped me write the book, and almost every one of our meetings was over breakfast.
Over breakfast.
We were
okay.
talking about yes. different aspects of...
Little disappointed, you know, it wasn't over shots of Russian vodka. Yeah, but, you know, I'm okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with breakfast.
Yeah, Jan would have said over scotch.
Chilled Russian vodka is not a bad place to start.
Where do relationships get built, right? They get built around... You meet with somebody over a breakfast and then you pull out a pen and...
There's something I think very human, very, you know, almost essential to being human, that when you sit down and you share a meal authentically with somebody, it really is quite remarkable. There's a vulnerability, authenticity, sort of. There's a sense of transparency there, you know, and sometimes it can be really awkward.
Yeah,
you know, there's a reason why at family Christmases people end up in arguments, you know.
That certainly
happened in our home for years, and I've heard about it from many others. So
I grew up in an Italian family where things were loud, but you know, it's interesting because I remember I was down in Nicaragua. I had a couple of business guys with me, and we just ran into the office for about 20 minutes. And there was a woman there who was repaying a loan. And I didn't know her well. I mean, I knew of her, but I didn't know her well. And then our director introduced the guests that I had with me to this woman. And she said this line. She said, and it connects with the doing the breakfast. She said, Vince, she said, you just keep showing up here. She said, you're here all the time. You just keep showing up time after time after time. And she said, this is what I know a true man is.
Mm.
She said, because so many of our men, they just leave us. I mean, these Latin American countries, it's just in so many cases, the young girls get pregnant and the guys disappear. But I think it's that same thing. You do breakfast and then you do it again and then you do it again. And then you build relationships up, right?
Mm-hmm,
and that's where you go deeper and deeper into the relationships as that level of trust builds. But it has to be, so, and it goes back to the time thing, right? How much time?
So tell me about the film. Book came after the film, I believe.
The book came after the film.
Film is sort of... driven by a bike ride to some degree.
Yes.
That was a fundraising journey, adventure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I had I was on the phone with one of my friends from Dallas, Texas, and we were talking, you know, maybe we were just talking about life. And she said, Vince, we were talking about fundraising at one point, and she said, Vince, your life is about adventure and activity. She said, that's what drives you. She said, why don't you do a fundraising activity for your charity based around adventure and activity? And just as she said that, I was looking out my window from my home and there was a lone cyclist cycling. And I thought, wow, what about a cycling trip? And what about a cycling trip across somewhere in Latin America? And then I thought, well, let's do Nicaragua and we'll do from sea level up into the mountains. So something that's really challenging. And then we'll get women who we've lent money to ride, do this difficult ride with us. And it was in the process of that I ran into Tim Alberts, who has a production company. And we're at a Woodstock type of, music festival, sitting on our lawn chairs. And we both happened to be there. I didn't know he was going to be there. He didn't know. And we just ran in and he said, what are you doing? I told him and he said, I'd love to do a documentary. And the more he heard about the story of it, you know, I wanted the bike ride to be representative of doing work in a third world country. And it's an uphill battle. Like it's just, every day is a struggle. Every day something goes wrong. But there's great value in the struggle. So we're having this conversation and he said, I know what I want to call the documentary.
Mm.
He said, and so we got on the story of Sisyphus.
Sisyphus, right.
But the value, it's the value of the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was ever anything I could, you know, share with audiences as I speak, is the great value that comes from struggle. And how do you build an attitude of understanding the value of struggle?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the rock up the hill, right? I
mean, that's the rock up the hill.
And what's interesting, too, for me, is that's the inches over the miles. You're not pushing a rock up a hill mile by mile. It's it's increment by increment, right? And it's hard, sweaty, troubling, painful work, right? In so many ways. And you could say that the same about anything. Relationships can be like that. Building a business can be like that, right? And writing a book, or whatever the case might be. So it's a great metaphor for so many things.
Right.
You know, Camus was obviously trying to get over the whole notion of meaninglessness.
Right.
And that's also, and suicide, and that's time for another conversation.
Right, right.
But maybe somebody will pick it up. It's a great book. It's a great read. It really is. I mean, it's a Greek myth, but it's also a great book by Albert Camus.
Right.
You know, the French existentialist, you know. But for those of you out in podcast land, check it out. I think the opening book, the opening line of the book is, if life is meaningless, then the most important question is suicide. And I think that's the opening line, right? And so that, hence, finding meaning in the struggle, finding meaning in the increment.
Right. And the natural inclination is to run.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah, let the boulder roll down and get the heck out of the way.
Right.
Yeah, off I go. Let somebody else deal with it.
Right. And so you only move forward to the degree that you can engage the struggle, because as you learn from the struggle, then it's no longer a struggle.
Well, and you know what? I just had this thought, Vince. I mean, maybe if Sisyphus had a few more breakfasts with a few folks, he might have had a couple other people to help him with the boulder.
Or if he was yakking to the guy on the other mountain who was pushing his boulder up to and saying,
like, how
are you dealing with it?
How can we work together on this, right? We're back to community and inclusion and all that. I think it's really
or
wonderful.
Sharing, or I mean, one guy says, well, you know, my rock fell back 10 feet yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, how'd that make you feel?
Yeah.
It made me feel terrible.
Yeah.
But I feel a lot better telling somebody I feel terrible.
That's right. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Let me encourage
you. Yeah. Well, this is like you say at the end of the book, the only way to do anything is with others, right? Because you can commiserate, you can affirm, and you can validate and say, you know what? I don't have the answer, but I'm kind of going through something similar. Let's talk about it some more. Let's get together and over breakfast and unpack this together. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's truly meaningful. And I think that's one of the many lessons from, I don't know about the film, but certainly from the book, for development workers, for anyone, frankly. Yeah.
In the documentary, there's a tiny section in the documentary. We're sitting at a bus stop in Managua, Nicaragua. And this woman, she tells a story, and it'll give you the Cole's notes. She said she was dropping off some of her products at a store. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and she had been up since 5. And she was really dirty by that point. And a business, and not to say that all business people are this way, but a business guy came out of it with a suit on and looked at her. And she said to me, she said, Vince, he looked at me like I was absolutely nothing.
Mm.
Like I was just, might as well have been the dirt on the ground. Mm. And she said, what's interesting is you came here, you looked at me, you saw something totally different and lent me the money to become a micro entrepreneur. And so that's we see something different in somebody, and we come alongside them, just as if somebody, you know, might have come along Sisyphus and said, hey, it's not the end of the world that you're pushing the thing up there.
Thanks.
And you know what, actually your muscles and your calves look amazing, and
sure
you have really strong forearms and
Lots of lessons to learn.
Yeah.
Before we wrap it up, why don't you, before I read this quote out of the book, where can people see the film? Has it done a festival route? Is it going to do festivals?
Yes. And so the challenging thing right now is that we can't release, the film festivals won't allow you to release the documentary for people to watch it, because they somehow, there's exclusive rights.
I'm sure,
It. So we're in a social justice film festival in Toronto in June. We were just in a film festival in Erie, Pennsylvania. So, I mean, as we find out more and more of the film festivals that we're going to be in, we'll certainly be putting that up on the website so people can...
Yeah, so the first sort of public viewing will be when?
The first public view, we had a sort of a private showing when it came out in, I think it was November. And then I'd have to double check with Tim when the first film festival that we're in Toronto. The first one we're in is the summer of 2017.
Oh, okay.
It's a social justice film festival, and then
and that's in Toronto?
And that's in Toronto.
Oh, okay. That's not real world, is it?
You know what? I'm sure I haven't gotten all the
information. Yeah, no, it's fine. It doesn't matter. There's so many. In fact, there's just so many festivals. Right. There's one, Oakville, Hamilton. I just found out about another one coming up, Social Justice, in February locally. Yeah. So they're all over.
Right. And we're just learning, like, again, we're just...
Cool. Well, obviously, check out the website, lendingjourney.com, for more information about the film, the book, Vince and his story, and so on. Quote, "The institutionalization of charity is antichrist." Close quote.
Right.
Explaining what he meant by that, he said that it isn't possible to love according to regulation, by prescript, or by plan. To call that love is blasphemous. It's something else, like maybe good works. Good works are great, but to affect change, you need to affect people, and the best way to affect people is to love them. Close quote. Like the song says, you say in the book, you gotta be there. Right. Tell me about the quote. Tell me about a little bit as we wrap this up, because this is a pretty big lesson, it seems to me. That's quite a quote to throw in chapter 7, entitled The Lending Journey. The institutionalization of charity is antichrist. And then there's lessons here, not only that you learned, but I think there's some big lessons here for us as well.
Right. And I think it goes back to the earlier part of our conversation. You can't throw money at something. Or you can't say, if you say I'm basing success on giving out 500 loans with an 85 to 90% repayment rate, that's not transformation. That's just saying we were able to push people to get this return on money. But they could be dead tomorrow. You could have marriages falling apart. You could have parents abusing their kids. That's not, you haven't succeeded. To succeed, you've got to shrink it and say, and I know this is a bit idealistic, but you have to get involved in the lives of the people you're helping. For me to lend you $300 and feel really good, that's not the answer. That's institutionalized. What I have to do, I have to get involved in the messiness of your life. So when my phone rings at 2 o'clock in the morning and someone said, Vince, we just had a guy beat up his wife, what do we do? Or we just had a daughter run away, or we just found out a young girl is pregnant and the parents are broken. That's the reality of truly loving the people. But to say, to create a dividing line and say, love only extends till you hit the line of which I'm not prepared to go anymore. that your line has to move. Luckily for me, I grew up, I was born into a family where there was no line. You loved everybody who walked through the door equally. I didn't have to learn that lesson. I was brought up in that lesson. And it's something I can give back to the world that I didn't have to work really hard at, right? Because it just, and most things that come naturally to us, where it's easier for us to give back to people. And that's really what that meant, is you can't put all these numbers and these systems in place to the detriment of not looking at the person and saying, but aren't they more important than going back to our financial supporters and saying, okay, well, we got 95% repayment. Does that really say
it's good?
Their life was transformed? But it is a great challenge for anybody running a charity in North America, is that
well, and for development practitioners on the ground,
right? You got to have their winning story, and
right? And it's almost as if your challenge is not to reduce this to the one liner, but your challenge is have a few more meals with the people you're working with.
Right.
I'm getting a little shiver. That's kind of a huge takeaway, right?
You know, one of my best friends in Latin America, I remember asking him once. I said, Ricardo, what is the most...
How come I'm not surprised his name's
Ricardo? Ricardo Chikawasai.
Nice.
That's He's a awesome. Quechua Indian.
Cool.
And I said to him, one of my best friends, Chikawasai. Anyways, I said, what is more important than anything else when I bring North Americans here with me? And he said, Vince, it's that they sit and eat what we eat.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. He said that because it says something about your culture when you'll sit down and eat with us and engage our culture.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Boy, what a... We just wouldn't think that as North Americans.
Yeah.
We would think, what can I do for you? They're going, no, not what you can do for me.
Right, just share in this experience with us together.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, become a part of my life.
Yeah, it's amazing. Listen, Vince, thanks so much. I mean, it's a real challenge. It's encouraging. It's a really powerful story. But I love the line has to move, as we learn how to love equally. Wow, that's a challenge for me, for every one of us in pretty much everything we do. So
it's a subconscious thing.
It's huge. The book is The Lending Journey. The film is Sisyphus Rides. It's coming soon. Yes. To a theater near you, and check out thelendingjourney.com for more information about the film, about the book, and about your speaking and so on. Vince, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you.